Welcome. Today I will be interviewing Drazho Kreshnik. He completed his master's in European, Russian, and Eurasian studies, focusing on Russian geopolitics and European energy security. His thesis focused on the effects the EU's third energy package has on Gazprom's energy assets in Europe. He previously worked for the United Nations Development Program, where he implemented legal reform in rural Bangladesh. Drazho has also worked with the World Bank Institute, implementing democratization and transparency initiatives in places such as Ukraine and Kazakhstan. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to sit down and meet with me for this interview today. I would like to begin by asking you the following question. In terms of your educational background, would you be able to provide our listeners today with more information about your academic background, along with some of the lessons that you learned as a result of successfully completing your master's degree in European, Russian, and Eurasian studies?
First of all, I'd like to thank you for having this interview.
My pleasure.
Yeah, where do I begin, I guess? Undergrad, finished political science and history at Laurier. I did a research specialization during my undergraduate studies. And then following that, I did a master's in European, Russian, and Eurasian studies. And then following the completion of that master's, I'm actually looking to do some more school. So we'll see how that all pans out.
What plans do you have for the future? Like, you obviously successfully completed two degrees. You're well-educated. Do you, like, plan on pursuing a career in international relations and affairs? Or what is it that you mostly want to focus on moving forward?
Well, that's usually the case with anybody who finishes IR or political science, right? You're either going to stick to academia, or you're gonna try something in the field. So I've been taking productive steps towards a career in the field. So we'll see how that pans out.
Drazho, what would you say is the best advice that you can provide to those who are perhaps interested in completing a degree similar to yours in European, Russian, and Eurasian studies?
Best advice I can provide, if someone interested in joining the program?
Yes.
People who usually take European or Russian studies in university are there because they like something related to the EU or Russia. So it's a bit of a niche topic to study. It's not as broad as political science per se. I'd say come with it with an open mind and take co-op and take full advantage of all of the travel opportunities that you can get. Academia is only as good as you can practically apply it afterwards.
I oftentimes advise students to look at programs that provide co-op placements. It's oftentimes a good way to obtain employment. Like, I completed my master's in public service at the University of Waterloo, and I was able to successfully complete the program. And following that, I was provided with a co-op placement, an 8-month co-op placement in a government agency. And then after that, I was offered a full-time position. But as a result of deciding to complete my degree in law, I'm currently completing my LLB at the University of London's international program, I decided to be a program editor here at the NATO Association of Canada, where I'm the program editor of Global Horizons, and I'm also studying full-time while doing some work for OMX. So I oftentimes tell students to look at a lot of the programs that are out there and definitely do take advantage of any co-op placements, any programs that provide co-op placements that are out there. You should look into it and you should definitely take advantage of that, because it's different to be in an academic setting. But then if you actually go into the real world and you're provided with an opportunity to see what the workplace is like, it's oftentimes a good way to see whether you enjoy a certain field or if you want to pursue something else.
Well, I think that's probably the best advice anybody can give in terms of academia is if there is a provision that allows for co-op in any program that you're taking, take co-op, because the job market isn't getting any easier for people, so especially following academia and no work experience after school. So if you can take a co-op program,
definitely. Your thesis focused on the effects that the EU's third energy package has on Gazprom's energy assets in Europe. Please discuss the significance of the research that you conducted.
My research focused on the beginning of the restrictions that the EU was placing on Gazprom's natural gas assets within Europe. So the EU implemented the third energy package recently, and it's in the process of dismantling Gazprom's physical assets within the European Union. Russia's fighting back based on the argumentation that these contracts were created prior to the EU energy package and that they were conducted on a bilateral basis with countries and not directly with the EU. My thesis concluded that at the end of the day, both the European Union and Russia would have to come to some agreement politically over what was happening with European energy security. As we can see now, these new sanctions, Russia's feeling a bit of a bite economically, both through targeted economic sanctions as well as through the dismantling of it, or attempted dismantling of its assets within the European Union. Both parties need to play nice, sort of colloquially speaking, only because they both have much to benefit. The European Union would have much to benefit from Russia's gas assets. And Russia needs Western investment, Western technology to advance and become, you know, one of the more advanced G7 nations. At this point in time, it's lagging behind, but we see that the cracks in the EU's foreign policy in terms of Russia are appearing to surface, especially with Germany, as the Germans recently, they're interested in producing another direct gas pipeline from Russia to Germany, which is causing many headaches in Brussels and with other EU member states, especially since the South Stream pipeline was cancelled at the behest of the Americans and the European Union.
What would you say are some of the challenges moving forward for Russia?
Russia as a nuclear power and as a very significant actor in international relations, especially since Crimea and Syria. The European Union needs to pay more attention to the demands and to the concerns, more or less, of its eastern neighbor. Cooperation can only be based on mutual understanding. And if nobody is taking Russia's concerns into consideration, then they're forcing the Russians into a position where they may be making some policy decisions that aren't really going to be in line with what the European Union really likes. You know, when the Russians deploy 150,000 troops on Ukraine's border in a matter of days, and the European Union could only send out 5,000 soldiers in the few months that it took for them to rally those troops on their own. It tells you how serious the Russians are about their concerns in the region. I think that there should be some mutual respect. The whole concept of the Cold War relationship that the West has imposed on Russia, somewhat correctly, somewhat incorrectly, but the Cold War is over, and they need to look at Russia from a different perspective. They need to look at it as an actual nation that's involved in the capitalist system now and that has actual sway and pull in the markets to some degree. You know, Russia is not China. However, in terms of Europe's relationship with Russia, I think it's a very integral relationship, especially when we see trade between Germany and Russia, or Germany, which is feeling the bite the most in terms of the sanctions with Russia. But, you know, if there's a mutual understanding, the Russians could play ball. You know, the Europeans also need to let go of some policy positions that might not be, you know, favorable to the Russians. But again, you know, this also ties in with the role of the Americans in European domestic policy.
In addition to your extensive academic background and your focus on completing this thesis, you also had experience working for the United Nations Development Program. This is where you were actively involved in implementing legal reform in rural Bangladesh. What was that experience like for you?
Challenging and different. Yeah, it looked nice in pictures. I mean, there were certain aspects of it that were really nice before I left the pictures as well. But it's a completely different world, right? Completely different way of life, completely different conception of the value of life. It's an interesting place, a very special place. I was in Dhaka, the capital of Bangladesh. I was stationed there. It's the fastest expanding mega city in the world. If trends continue, its population is destined to double by, I think, 2025, and it's at 19 million right now.
Wow.
So it's it was a really interesting place to work, especially since having private space was, I think, the biggest challenge. But yeah, it was a really interesting project. We were working on developing a parallel legal system to the one I was working functioning in the state, but on the rural level, simply because so many serious criminal cases being presented to the courts in the cities, because there are so many people, the courts have immense backlogs, so they're people aren't able to receive justice on time. So, you know, for example, you stole my cow, or you killed my goat or something like that, and you want, you know, remuneration as soon as possible, you'd probably wait around like 10 years for that even to reach the courts. And then, you know, legal fees are huge. So what the program was trying to do was reduce the fees as much as possible and to set up local grassroots courts made up of the people. And they had to include at least one woman on the panel just to give it a balance to deal with women's issues as well, which were somewhat held back previously just because of the nature of the culture and the setting.
In terms of women's issues, I think that it's oftentimes, if you look at countries that are in the process of being developed, if you look at certain legal reforms and you look at changes that are being implemented in terms of policy implementation, oftentimes women are also provided with more accessibility to these professions. So I think that that's great that in Bangladesh, that was one of the areas of focus. In terms of addressing poverty law, oftentimes in developing countries, there are issues pertaining to providing accessibility to those suffering as a result of poverty. Were there any policies other than focusing on expediting these cases to be heard in a timely manner? Were there any policies or anything offered or focused on in terms of addressing poverty in this region?
Yeah, we focused more on this specific project, but there were poverty clusters within the UNDP office in Dhaka as well that focused on, you know, a whole plethora of poverty issues, whether they be in city or in the rural areas. Mind you, you know, Dhaka is a very it's a conflicting city. You know, there's some certain parts of the city that are littered with mansions, houses that I haven't even seen in Canada that are this size. But at the same time, you know, right next to these mansions, right next to these rich neighborhoods, there's a huge slum that's housing, you know, thousands of people. And these slums are expanding at such a high rate just because of climate change is actually one of the problems as well. Rising sea levels is salinating the water that's used for crops. So a lot of the farmers are leaving the villages and coming to the cities, and, you know, they're either being employed as rickshaw drivers or they're working in one of the numerous sweatshops. So poverty is a big issue in Bangladesh, and there are plenty of UN programs and projects that are working on alleviating the project as much as possible. To what extent, it's difficult for me to say just because I wasn't part of that cluster at that time. But I know that they were a much larger cluster than the one that I was working on. So there's a lot of work to be done in Bangladesh.
In terms of the work that you did for the United Nations Development Program, what would you say were some of the biggest challenges that you faced? And at the same time, what were some of your biggest achievements? What would you consider to have been the most rewarding as a result of completing that placement or work for them?
One of the biggest challenges was definitely accommodation. When people ask you, like, hey, are you culturally sensitive? I mean, it's kind of cliche to say, yeah, I'm culturally sensitive to living in Canada. But that's, I mean, this is something that's completely different. When you're thrown into a situation, when you're living in a different culture where you stand out so much, this isn't usually a thing that, you know, white people talk about. It's like, hey, we stand out in another country. You know, you were usually used to living in advanced societies. And then when you go over to these other developing states and, you know, there are, you know, 200 white people in a city of 19 million, you know, you stand out. And dealing with that was a really interesting opportunity for me, I guess, so to speak. I guess everything is an opportunity, even though it was more of a challenge than anything, because the population perceives you in a specific way simply because of your skin color. So there are expectations of you to have money. So you're dealing with beggars is a daily issue. Figuring out what to eat was also a difficult challenge.
What did you end up eating in Bangladesh?
Finding clean food was a difficulty. Right. The water is very dirty. Dhaka is the I can't remember what the river is called that runs through Dhaka, but it's the source of the Ganges. So the Ganges being the dirtiest river in the world, and this is the source. You can imagine how clean this water was. It wasn't really clean. So just getting by daily was a challenge, not to mention dealing with, you know, perceptions of the locals of you. So you always stick out. You're likely to be a target of mugging, of robbery, which happened to many of my colleagues. Luckily, I survived. I don't know I might have been luck. But yeah, so that was one of the most challenging aspects of being in Dhaka, was getting used to the climate, getting used to, I was sick for about 3 weeks. The food wasn't working with me quite well. You're really entering a different reality completely. All of your senses are on. I mean, like I was saying, it's a city of 19 million people. So per square kilometer, there's 18,000 people. So you're constantly surrounded by people all the time. There's no time to rest. All of your senses are on at all times. Even when you're sleeping, there's always noise outside. So that was a challenge, learning how to filter noise out when it's impossible to have silence. One of the successes, surviving.
You made it.
Yeah, I made it. You know,
you're here.
It's nice, yeah.